The 30th season of the Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck continues this week with concerts on Thursday and Friday night at the Women's Club of Saugatuck. I spoke with co-director Drew Lee, who will serve as pianist for these concerts, about the program, and we began with how he assessed last season and what he hoped for in the 30th season.
What we wanted to do was, I mean, what we always want to do, we always strive to do, is to grow support, grow our budget, so that we can bring in top quality artists. And that was particularly true for this year in terms of celebrating our 30th. And we did exactly that. And we're very pleased to have been able to bring in, for example, last week, the Claremont Trio from New York City to open our season. And we also try to, as we do every year, keep it a mix of outside groups like the Claremont Trio and familiar favorites from our local area, our local artists who have always loved playing in Saugatuck. And we call it our family, our musical family. And so balancing, we always try to find ways to balance programmatically in terms of personnel, local artists and also outside artists. And I think we did an okay job this year doing exactly that.
This is the first summer in the Fontana series history that there was no summer festival. And I feel it as a kind of a hollow loss here. And are you ever reminded that it's kind of amazing that your series, your festival, is continuing on so well?
We are always amazed by that, and we are always mindful of that, Kara. We as a board of directors, we are always, not just annually, but every month that we meet, every time we meet, we ask ourselves, first of all, things don't seem to be changing, at least quickly, but they will inevitably at some point. And how do we future-proof ourselves as an institution, as a festival, to weather those future storms, whether they're audience numbers or audience demographics? We're always asking ourselves, how do we future-proof? How do we make things better? How do we cater to the broadest possible audience? And so the results of asking these questions and investigating these questions have resulted in the broadening of our education program. We have masterclass series now. We have we've always had and are continuing to have the Young Listeners series, and trying to cater to the next generation, so to speak, of music lovers. And we're always asking ourselves, you know, are we logistically operating in the most efficient way? Are we selling tickets in the most efficient way? And maybe the answer is not. And in the future, we may have to look into taking credit cards, which we currently don't. And that's potentially a turnoff to some people, but it also, to us, is part of the charm of this festival. But we're always trying to strike some sort of a balance between how we've always operated, which can sometimes be deceivingly comfortable because, you know, since it's worked for so many years, it's very easy to fall into the low of, well, why fix it if it ain't broke? But that's a dangerous pitfall to fall into, because anything could happen and things do change and are changing. And so we're asking ourselves, you know, how do we expand? How do we cater to the next generation of listeners? How do we make chamber music interesting and relevant to today's world and today's music listeners? It's a constant dynamic, and we're very fortunate. I do acknowledge that our festival has been very successful for so many years and continues to thrive. But we're very aware of the fact that we can't be complacent in that, and we're always trying to cook up new ideas and strategies to improve ourselves.
Cash only, huh?
Yes. Yeah, it is cash only. Yes.
And there's also been, maybe it's just that it's such a small community, but the people who feel responsible for this festival stay involved for a long time. I'm thinking of Joan Conway and Robert Byrons.
Yes, yes. Yes, there's a vested interest in, like, a serious, genuine commitment to seeing through the thriving, the sustenance, the health, of ongoing health of this festival. And we are so fortunate to be part of such a community. It's rare, and I fully recognize that, and I am always ever grateful for that level of support and that level of dedication and commitment from our community members.
Well, I'll just wrap up this portion of our chat by saying congratulations on 30 years of the Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck. That is no small thing.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask you to tell me the title of the program that you're performing this week.
Check Mix. Sorry, I laugh every time I read that or think about that, and it brings back memories of when Jenny and I were sitting down and trying to come up with our season program, and the titles for each of the concerts for our season. And this week happens to be all Czech music, well, all music by Czech composers. Different generations of Czech composers. So there's a mix of different generations, a mix of different styles. The first half of the program is very brooding, very elegiac. So there's some darkness. And maybe if I have an opportunity later in this conversation, I can get into that more. But the second half of the program is very very optimistic, very joyous, very affirmative. And so it's a mix in many, many regards. And of course, the play on words was just we couldn't say no to that. Czech mix. So yeah, Czech mix.
Both the music and the snack are irresistible.
Yes, indeed. And it'll leave you thirsting for more.
Well, let's first talk about the musicians and colleagues who will be joining you on these two concerts, Thursday and Friday night, 7:30 p.m.
It will be myself playing the piano for the three pieces that are on the program. It will be also Jenny Walvard, my wife, our co-director of this festival, on the violin. Leslie Van Becker from the Grand Rapids Symphony on viola, a longtime friend of the festival and a longtime personal friend of ours. Alicia Eppinga, also from the Grand Rapids Symphony, will be playing the cello. And Adam Liebert will be playing the violin. And Adam and I go back a long ways. We kind of, musically speaking, grew up together in the Grand Rapids area playing in the Youth Symphony. He was always much better than I. But that's great because his career has flourished, and we're just very happy to have him involved in our festival in this capacity.
So that sounds like a great lineup. Well, why don't we dive into the pieces on the program?
Sure. The program will open with Josef Suk's Elegy, Opus 23, scored for piano trio. And the title, Elegy, usually denotes a piece in a minor key, something darker, something more tragic, something more befitting of those darker emotions.
Sort of a dirge or something like that.
Right. Suk's Elegy has a little bit of that, but it's actually predominantly very beautiful. It's heavenly. It's peaceful. It gives the listener a glimpse of peace. And I believe this elegy was written, well, it was originally composed for a different instrumentation. I don't remember exactly what, but it was bigger than just piano trio. It involved a string quartet and I think harp. He rearranged this for trio, I believe, for the funeral of Julius Zeyer, a Czech poet whose death inspired the rearrangement of this for performance at his funeral, I think. Zeyer's poems, if I understand correctly, first of all, they're very epic, but they also idealize the notion of finding peace only in the moments of death. And I feel that Suk's musical approach to this, composing it in a major key, mirrors that notion of Zeyer's works. And it's about 5 minutes. It's a short piece, and it will set the stage for the two pieces that follow. Very different from the next piece, which is Smetana's piano trio, his only piano trio, Opus 15. The Smetana trio is a unique, powerful work, and it is also very elegiac in its nature. And it was composed shortly after the death of his oldest daughter. He had four daughters, three of whom died at a very young age, and he was just, as you can imagine, flooded with feelings of destruction and tragedy. And this trio completely embodies that. It's remarkable because it's romanticism at its just most unbridled extreme. The chords are full. The writing is difficult. The lines are lush. The harmonies are daring and just completely unbridled. That's the only word I can think of it for it. And it really foreshadows some of the later works of later romantic and turn-of-the-century composers. It's got a funeral march, but it's not all dark. There are moments of peace. There are moments of beauty, which are juxtaposed in between these episodes of darkness and anger. It gives us, I feel, a glimpse into the nobility of his daughter's character. And the trio ends. If you listen to it for the first time, you can't imagine it actually ending on a positive note, but it does. At the very last moment, it ends in G major, and so hope does triumph, and the nobility of his daughter's memory does supersede any sense of loss and tragedy ultimately. So it's a very dramatic work. It's about 30 minutes long. We've never, at least in the 9 years that Jenny and I have been leading the Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck, we've never programmed the Smetana Trio.
Last year, you programmed the Shostakovich Piano Trio, which is a wartime work that also deals with loss and devastation, too.
Yes, the scope of the Shostakovich is very similar to the scope of the Smetana, in its soundscape, its orchestration. Thank you for reminding me of that. That was a very memorable performance that I also was involved in.
Here's something I just have to ask. as performers, it seems like you do have to summon up your own emotional will during a performance. But if you can't say you've experienced that kind of loss that the composer did, how do you bridge that gap? Is the piece encoded already with the emotions you need to express, and he helps somehow? I don't know.
That is a superb question. And I think a successful composer does give the performer and the listener the right tools to assimilate and bridge that gap, even if he or she has not experienced that themselves. And some composers are better at that than others. Some composers are better at that than others to certain performers and certain listeners. The Smetana Trio, Smetana does I feel, an extremely remarkable job of encoding, so to speak, this piece with the right language, the right sounds to evoke, even to the listener who has not experienced such depths of tragedy, a notion, an idea, a hint, a strong hint of the scope of that tragedy. And I actually, when I first heard the Smetana Trio years ago, I did not know the story behind why it was composed. I did not know about his daughter's death. I didn't know any of that. But I knew there was something. There had to be something of that scope, the scope of that tragedy, of a tragedy of some sort, in order to inspire such a work. It's just powerful in its dissonance, powerful in its orchestration. It cannot, to me, have been born of just a composer writing a piece of music because he or she was trained to be able to do something like that. I felt that Smetana had to have experienced some tragedy, something of that nature, in order to be able to write music of that scope. And so I don't know if that answers your question, but I think the answer is yes. There is an encoding in there that bridges that gap for the listener who hasn't necessarily experienced that level of tragedy and darkness in their lives.
Well, now let's turn to the beautiful, beautiful quintet, Opus 81 by Dvorak, which is so big-hearted and expansive, and I love the piano part.
I do, too. And can you believe, Kara, that I actually have never played this piece until now?
Wow.
I have heard it. I've heard it so many... Yes, wow, right? And I've heard it so many times. It's a summer piece to me, and it's because I've only ever heard it during the summer at summer festivals, and so it's a very summery piece. It's a very affirmative piece. It's one that I've always wanted to play, and have either been shy about playing it or intimidated by the people I would have been playing it with. So I never got around to it. Silly me, until now.
That's funny. I think of you as a fine Debussy player, and maybe you would have to explore a whole different side of your personality to get into Dvorak's kind of rustic and rugged style.
Very rugged. It's a hard piano part. Mm-hmm. I won't lie.
Mm-hmm.
But it just speaks to Dvorak's masterful talent and at orchestration. He makes the piano sound, I think, in the right hand, and I'm striving for this. I'm very much striving for this. In the right hand, like many different instruments, I find myself studying the score and realizing, oh, I have to match this pizzicato sound here, or I have to match this legato arco sound here. I think the best works in the chamber literature are those that are written in a way that transcend the what would be considered the traditional scope of the instrument in terms of its sonority and its sound. And here the piano, I feel, is being called by Dvorak to sound like an orchestra. And that's, I think, the hardest thing. It's the most life-affirming, one of the most life-affirming pieces of music, not just of the chamber literature. It's so joyous, but it's also balanced with an appropriate mixture of melancholy, of sadness, of some tragedy and humor. It's got everything in it, and I'm just so excited to get to present this for our audience this week.
Well, that's wonderful. I think we've covered the program pretty well here today, and I wish you all the best of luck with two performances, Thursday and Friday at 7:30 p.m. And Drew, did you have anything else you wanted to add or any last thoughts?
Yes. Speaking of, going back to your earlier question of assessment, nurturing a younger audience is of utmost importance. You have people saying the cliche, the arts are dying. And in some ways it may be true, in other ways it is not necessarily true. But in any case, there is one truth, and that is we always have to cater to the next generation. And so with that in mind, we have decided to now offer free tickets to students on Friday nights, any student. As long as you have an ID of some sort, it's free. You can get in. So any students out there listening to this who have any interest in chamber music, any curiosity, give it a try. You know, Saugatuck is a wonderful place to visit. And if you spend the day at Oval Beach and then have dinner at one of the restaurants and are looking for something to do in the evening on Friday, stop on by. People say there's no such thing as a free lunch, but there's such thing as a free concert.
For students. That's on the corner of Butler and Hoffman in Saugatuck, the Woman's Club of Saugatuck, a charming little hall. I hope you can fit all those students in there, along with the regular crowd.
We will figure out a way.
Okay.
No matter what.
Well, until next time, thank you very much, Drew, and good luck with the music this week.
Thanks so much, Kara.